Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, or good morning, as the case may be. Across all these many prolific time zones, from the Hawaiian and Tahitian Islands in the west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, we're going to be talking about South America and the Caribbean, north to the pole, worldwide on the Internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning. I'm Art Bell. Well, it's good evening and good morning. Anyway, hi there. We've got an interesting program coming up for you as we begin a brand new week. Scott Corrales is going to be my guest, and I'm probably mispronouncing his last name, and he sent me a very nice bio, and I'm not going to read it. If I were to read this, I would destroy every Spanish name in it. Now, Scott is born of Cuban parents, I can tell you that, lived in Mexico City from 1968 to 1975, and then moved to Puerto Rico in 1975, remaining there until 1982. Scott is here to talk about a new book he has written called Chupacabras and Other Mysteries. The Chupacabra. You know how I feel about the Chupacabra. I'm intrigued. I have always wondered if it really could be, if this creature, this mystical question mark creature, could really be out there. Chupacabra. The one thing I do know is it means goat sucker. Anyway, he's written a book about it, so he ought to be the guy to ask, and that's exactly what we're going to do here in a few moments. And other mysteries as well. Let me get a couple of announcements out of the way and a couple of things, and then we'll talk to Scott, and we'll make him pronounce all the Spanish names in his bio here. All right, first of all, a big switch in San Diego. Big time switch. From KFMB, back home to Kogo. AM 600 in San Diego, KOGO. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are back home. Kogo will be carrying the program 7 days a week. 7 days a week. Sunday Dreamland will come to you 10 to 1 in the beginning, and no doubt we'll get that down to the 6 o'clock time eventually, because everything has moved forward 1 hour. But we are home, back at Kogo. It will take a few people in San Diego a little while to realize that, but coming home. Now, welcome also to KSPT in Sandpoint, Idaho, 1400 on the AM dial. Would like to welcome you to the program. Great to have, to have both, and to be back on Kogo, of course, in San Diego. So there's going to be a little bit of dial whiplash going on down in the southern part of California. But I presume people will adjust.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Stories on the radio must be Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts and things like that.
Yeah.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was a little wary about these, other than the Kennedy assassination. And all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you too?
Yeah, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here? And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And today, I don't believe the government story of 9/11. Here's the three options. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen, or we knew about it and participated in it, or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. And I started to think they knew it was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
Now we take you back to the night of June 16th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, Scott Corrales, I can tell you, attended Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey. I can tell you that he was an office research assistant, an executive aide, a personnel manager, an industrial engineer. But I'm not going to tell you much more, because a lot of it gets into Spanish names, and I will embarrass myself, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Art. How are you doing?
I'm just fine. For you, it should be morning. You're back somewhere in Pennsylvania, right, or New York?
That's correct. Bradford, PA.
Okay. Scott, what led you into an interest to our friend, the Chupacabra?
I think I've always been interested in the paranormal manifestations associated with the UFO phenomenon. Since I read John Keel's book, The Mothman Prophecies, back in the mid-70s, when Chupacabras came around, or along rather, it was just the culmination of a number of strange events taking place in Puerto Rico for a number of years. The Chupacabras wave matured in 1995, but if you go back to 1991, you were already getting some serious mutilations of domestic animals.
All right. We were not hearing about it back then, were we?
No, you were not. Not at all. Part of the problem is that this was simply considered domestic consumption by the island media. Of course, in 1989, you'd had the infamous fanged bird, or vampire bird, known as the Chotacabras, which caused some confusion. And that was considered the source of many of the mutilations at the time.
It's already confusing me. In other words, there was a bird that was thought to do these mutilations?
Yes, indeed. Back in 1989, this bird, or rather a number of very strange fanged birds, was found on the island. These birds howled, allegedly, and they had reptilian characteristics. And certainly they caused a great deal of confusion among the population.
Well, is it not true that birds are thought to be the modern ancestors of dinosaurs?
I believe I've heard that in National Geographic somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you that some of the birds out here in the area where I live look absolutely prehistoric. I mean, they look like throwbacks. They're gigantic. And when they want a movie with a really evil-looking bird, they come out here to Pahrump, Nevada, where I am, and they get them. They're gigantic. And they do look evil. At any rate, you said when you began commenting that you thought it was connected to the UFO phenomenon, or you suggested that it was connected to the UFO phenomenon. By that, I mean the Chupacabra. But in fact, you don't really think it's connected to UFOs, do you?
I've always felt that this is a strictly paranormal phenomenon in the same way that the Mothman was, that the Lizard Man in North Carolina. It belongs to that order of manifestations. But then again, I also believe that the UFO phenomenon, far from being extraterrestrial, is also of paranormal origin.
Well, Mothman and the rest of them, I don't know about those so much as I do the Chupacabra. I do know this. I've watched Spanish TV. I know you must know Linda Howe.
I certainly do. I've had the pleasure.
All right. Linda has been heavily investigating Chupacabra now for some time. And it seems very real, Scott. I mean, there are hundreds of animals that have died that they have documented. I've seen them on TV.
I think it's most definitely real. Not only the number of animals in five different countries, that have been shown and researched, and veterinarians have autopsied, and the whole nine yards.
Exactly.
You also have the fact that the testimony is more often than not unimpeachable. Simply, these people have no idea why this has happened to them, why their livelihoods have been affected in such a manner.
Well, when people hear about the chupacabra, they chuckle and laugh. But in Mexico, for example, you don't get a lot of really good reactions when you talk about the chupacabra. In other words, they're not laughing in Mexico.
Precisely, nor were they laughing in Puerto Rico when things started there, nor were they laughing in December when the phenomenon moved on to Spain.
Spain?
Yes, indeed. In
Spain.
December 1996.
Spain?
Yes, indeed. Spain and Portugal.
And Portugal?
Researcher Bruno Cardenosa looked into not only the mutilation, but disappearance, outright disappearance of entire flocks of sheep in Zaragoza, I believe. And the chupacabras was actually invoked by the authorities as the culprit.
It was noted as the culprit by the authorities?
Yes. They had said, well, whatever is causing this cannot be X, Y, or Z. They enumerated the wildlife of Spain. Spain has no bears. Spain does not have any wolves anymore. So the attack seemed to match what was going on in the Caribbean and in Central America. And mm-hmm. they figured, well, this could be the chupacabras.
Well, do you believe the chupacabra began in Puerto Rico?
To all indications, yes. This would have been in March of 1995, when a reporter for the WKAQ TV station
mm-hmm.
first started to inform his audience of what was going on in Orocovis, which is a town municipality in the center of the island.
Mm-hmm.
A number of sheep had been found completely drained of blood. People were seeing strange entities running around, entities corresponding to what we've come to know as the gray aliens, quote-unquote.
Well, here we go. UFO connection.
Exactly. That's where you start getting this gray area, no pun intended, involving strange creatures, manifestations of earlier aberrant beings that were never seen again during the chupacabras waves, like tree-dwelling grays, for lack of a better description.
Tree-dwelling
grays. That emitted the sibilant sounds and could mesmerize people.
Let us tell everybody what we believe a chupacabra looks like, based on a compilation of the descriptions or any photographs that exist. Oh, by the way, Scott, are there any what you would consider legitimate photographs of the chupacabra?
Not known to me. I don't think there's been a single photo. However, I think that the chupacabras has attracted a cottage industry of its own in hoax photographs.
Oh, I have any number of photographs on my website, and I treasure each and every one of them in their own way. But there's none that I would say, there it is, that's absolutely a chupacabra.
No, I feel that the best indication we have to go as to its image remains the identikit image put together by researcher Jorge Martin back in 95.
What do we think? If there was a chupacabra standing right in front of me, what would I be seeing?
If what you saw matched the description given by all the other witnesses,
exactly,
you'd see a creature with a kangaroo-like body, a humanoid head with wraparound red eyes, would appear to be very small quills, vibrating quills running down its back,
mm-hmm.
Very scrawny, almost useless forearms, and certainly a membrane under its arms that enables it to fly. However, before we start saying that it flies like a bird, let's clarify that by saying that it has been seen to float in the air and take off.
To float? Well, now, to float? That's not flying.
Not flying, but nonetheless, people say it has wings, quote-unquote. It has a membrane under its arms. People have seen it float. They've seen it float across highways. They have seen it float into pens to extract animals. But nonetheless, I think people like to think, well, if it has wings, it's flying. So
well,
therefore, flight comes into question.
Well, but floating is paranormal. Things don't float. They don't suspend in the air without apparent means of aerodynamic.
I agree with you. It's just that flight has become the, I guess, a commonplace term to describe its motion in the air. People think, well, if it's in the air, it's flying. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you get so many descriptions. It flew here, it flew there, it flew over us, it landed in my backyard, and so forth.
But they don't note it flapping its wings.
It has never been seen flapping its wings.
Uh-huh.
Certainly, if it had wings, they could not sustain its weight. So whatever mechanism it's using to levitate, for want of a better term, has nothing to do with the little membranes under its arms.
All right. What about its basic, well, teeth, fangs?
The original drawing showed it as not having fangs. Then other witnesses said, yes, it has fangs, protruding fangs. And its most distinctive feature, what appears to be a proboscis of some sort that comes out of its mouth and is suspected to be the instrument used to puncture the animals which are later exsanguinated.
All right. Well, now we get into what I consider to be pretty serious stuff. In other words, these animals, I've heard various descriptions of how they've been killed, but basically it comes down to this. They have puncture wounds in their neck. Outside, somehow, there's more. I can't remember. Linda said there were two puncture wounds, I believe, on the outside, and then some other kind of puncture wound on the inside. Is that correct?
If I recall correctly, if you look at the photos of the victims, you can see the one single puncture mark,
one single.
The instrument, whatever you want to call this proboscis, seems to have gone straight in through the organs, and sometimes piercing the organs, sometimes pushing them aside as it tried to drain blood. In many cases, we now hear that the creature has left its victims perfectly hollow.
Hollow?
That is, it's taking organs as well.
How
this can be accomplished is truly beyond the understanding of zoology. Certainly there's no natural creature capable of doing these things.
And yet, in fact, the autopsies have shown this to be the case. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
In other words, that's the most horrible thing I've ever heard. In other words, it literally sucks everything from its victim as one would somehow suck an egg from a little tiny hole.
That's a pretty good description, yes.
Yuck. How many animals, Scott, have been so affected? If you were to, you know, put together a compilation of everything from, the whole time.
I think the range of creatures has run the gamut from racehorses in one incident to household cats and dogs. And if we tried to find a total, for Puerto Rico at least you'd have well over 1,000 animals.
1,000 animals.
For Mexico, I'm not quite sure, nor for Central America.
Okay.
In Spain, they number in the hundreds.
In the hundreds?
Hundreds of sheep, yes.
Now, surely the veterinarians who do the autopsies have got to say something. I mean, they come back and either all of the blood or all of the internal organs of these animals are missing. What do they say?
Well, I think that the Department of Agriculture in Puerto Rico was steadfast in saying that this is just predator damage. These are either dogs or feral monkeys causing this kind of damage. Flying in the face of the evidence, of course.
Has anybody ever seen a feral monkey do this?
Apparently there have been troops of feral monkeys in Puerto Rico since a certain laboratory conducting experiments shut down or released a certain number of them into wilderness. And they have apparently managed to coexist with the local wildlife.
Yes, and, but would they have the ability, physical ability, to do to these animals what has been done?
No, nor certainly would wild dogs. However, I think it's the most convenient explanation, and it's the explanation that seemed to satisfy the endless, you know, filling of bureaucratic reports.
Well, it doesn't satisfy me. I'm not a scientist, Scott, but if something has been done like the removal of all internal organs or all blood, as far as I knew, Scott, the only thing that would take blood would be a bat. Now, they've got vampire bats. They're real. But they bite their victim, and then they lap up the blood. They don't suck all the blood out.
That's correct. And that also brings us to another interesting feature of chupacabras. Many times it would leave a very thick lather on its victims, even though that it probably had not quite gotten a chance to drain of blood quite yet.
A lather.
A lather, yes. A very thick, viscous substance, which had many people thinking, well, yes, it's probably some sort of giant vampire bat that's come from South America. And, of course, you had a lot of the peasantry speculating as well, yes, well, we get a lot of strange things coming from Venezuela, things come in cargo ships, etc. So I think throughout the ordeal, you have the average person is trying to find a quote-unquote rational explanation.
Yes, well, maybe there is not one. Scott, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June
16, 1997. Baila tu cuerpo, alegría, Macarena, que tu cuerpo para dar la alegría y cosa buena. Baila tu cuerpo, alegría, Macarena, Macarena.
Now don't you worry about my boyfriend, the boy whose name is Vitorino. I don't want him.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
Could there be a creature out there capable of doing what the Chupacabra is said to have done? Is it paranormal? Is it a throwback? Is it something from ancient days when dinosaurs roamed the earth? Or is it something brand new? Or is it something from a lab somewhere? We'll talk about all these possibilities and continue to tell you about this horrid little creature called the Chupacabra in a moment.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now, you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Now we take you back to the night of June 16th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Back now to Scott Corrales, his book, soon to come out. Not out, by the way, Chupacabras and Other Mysteries. When will your book be available, incidentally?
July 4th.
July 4th?
That's correct. That's patriotic date.
It certainly is. Is it going to be available generally in bookstores, or will there be a number to call, or what?
It will be available in bookstores.
All right. Back to the Chupacabra. You have described this animal. What about the claws? It said three claws. Is that correct?
That's correct. No one's ever seen it using them for any purpose. Apparently, its modus operandi for attacking animals is heavily based on mesmerizing them and then proceeding to use this this proboscis that it has, which in fact gave the chupacabras the name sacalenguas, or tongue sticker outer, in Central America. Because that's exactly what I guess caught people's attention the most.
Yes, well, that's when you begin losing your organs and your blood, so it would get your attention. Has this animal, Scott, attacked any humans?
You know, the very first reported human attack was in May of 96. The victim was a woman named Theodora Ayala in Mexico. But otherwise, there have been no attacks on humans. People claim to have been pursued by the chupacabras, as in the case of two fishermen in Canovanas, Puerto Rico. But fortunately, it's never demonstrated an interest in humans. It seems to concentrate on animals, which, curiously enough, and if you can allow a little bit of levity into the matter, was explained by a psychic who invited himself into Chupacabras research, saying that human blood has had too many toxins in it, and Chupacabras preferred something less polluted.
Really? Great. You know, it sounds real, I'm afraid. No doubt we have toxins that would kill the little beastie. The other worrisome thing that I've heard about a chupacabra is its ability to go, some people have said, 50, 60 miles per hour. Is there anything to that?
That's the first time I've heard. Certainly, I've never heard that it had an endurance record or speed record either. Most of the cases that I've read about, the cases that I had the pleasure of assisting Jorge Martin with when I was in Puerto Rico, seemed to just involve the creature appeared, was either heard in the night emitting these horrifying screams.
Screams.
But no one ever saw it actually committing the crimes until much later. A gentleman named Daniel Santos saw it landing in its backyard. It simply came out of the sky, making a buzzing sound, rested on top of a boulder for a while before taking off again.
Mm-hmm.
But no one ever clocked it as it was flying by or anything like that.
There are people who claim they have seen it scurrying across the road or by the road. Many human sightings.
That is very correct. I think the very first sighting of that sort was in Canovanas, where some people were waiting for the bus in the early afternoon, and they thought they saw a dog running toward them on all fours. And it happened to be the Chupacabras. People have seen it scurrying across Highway 3 in Puerto Rico, both daytime and at night. And I believe the same applies in Mexico. People have actually seen it engaging in, chicken crossing the road kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
However, at this point, I just want to add, the variety of sightings in Mexico became wildly different from the sightings in Puerto Rico at one point, where you actually had federales and municipal policemen taking pot shots at a gigantic winged humanoid creature, something like a Bigfoot with wings almost. And this creature was really jumping fences and eluding the police. So we were getting a variety of different entities being seen in Mexico at some point. Yeah. And even a bona fide vampire bat called the Vampiro Spectri, which apparently has a tremendous wingspan, was also being seen in southern Mexico at the time.
Hmm.
So whereas the Puerto Rican situation was rather controlled, you had the one perpetrator to deal with. Mexico was a free fire area.
I take it you saw Jurassic Park.
I certainly have, yes.
Mm-hmm. I happen to know for a fact that our government, governments in general, have been experimenting with some rather unsavory things. What possibility is there that these animals, these aberrations, are out of a laboratory somewhere, rejects in some sort of perverted genetic research?
Well, we could start by saying that the island of Puerto Rico has always been used for all kinds of research.
Right.
Radiation, thalidomide, all kinds of nasty things have been tested there.
Mm-hmm.
So it would not be surprising, given the track record, that such a thing could be produced there, although to what purpose remains a big question. What would anyone gain?
Well, what do we gain by cloning, Scott?
Well, I guess cloning, you know, to digress here, would be probably a good way of someday being able to clone certain organs to reproduce organs for people who need transplants, etc.
Mm.
However, there has been talk, and certainly the book Chupacabras does mention this, a gentleman who claimed to have seen chupacabras in Arizona or New Mexico
in the
1950s.
Yeah, oh, in the 50s?
In the 50s, that's correct.
In the 50s?
In the 50s. The gentleman claims that he was a military policeman and that these creatures had actually been part of the quote-unquote cargo manifest of a crashed UFO. And
mm-hmm. See, here we go again. Now, you're kind of jumping around here with regard to the UFO connection.
I'm trying to avoid it as much as possible.
Well,
it keeps on coming up.
Well, is there a connection? I mean, what chance is there? You're leaning against it, but you kind of keep coming back to it.
Okay, Dr. Rafael Lara, who's, I think, one of Mexico's foremost investigators in the Chupacabra subject, clearly said that at no point during the Chupacabra sightings in his country was there a single UFO sighting and happening anywhere near where the events were taking place.
Well, on the other hand, if a UFO dispensed or disgorged some, it may well be they began to mate and move. So
that's also very possible. However, in Puerto Rico, we do get cases of UFO activity and Chupacabra's presence. But just to go back to the gentleman in with the story about New Mexico or Arizona for a minute, he said the creatures developed a taste for blood and for sheep after being fed these animals. I guess they were in some sort of reservation up there where sheep were being raised or what have you. And this is a taste that developed as one animal they seemed to be able to consume without any problem.
Mm.
And it was a breeding pair, according to his testimony.
Well, again, I go back to the hard evidence. Hundreds, if not thousands, of animals with either their blood or all their organs gone. Is it not incumbent on those veterinarians that have done the autopsies to not put it off on dogs or some other thing because these animals could not do what is being done?
Well, I'd just like to clarify that perhaps by saying you have any kind of state-sponsored veterinarian was, I guess, hedging his bets by using the ape and dog explanation. But you had medical photographers from the College of Medicine in Puerto Rico coming out and saying, this is impossible.
Right.
You cannot have a two-ton bull having all its blood, its liver, its heart extracted
right.
through a single orifice.
Exactly. In other words, here we've got our government saying UFOs are swamp gas or they're flares or one thing or another, and we can argue about it till the cows come home, pun intended.
If
or,
they do.
exactly. Or not. That's fine. Flares over Phoenix, whatever. But here we've got animals with wounds and autopsies performed showing things that are absolutely impossible with any terrestrial explanation.
However, I think there's also the concern, will this information cause a panic? And in Puerto Rico, I think that the information was terrifying to the farmers. But to city dwellers who never go to the countryside except on, you know, on a holiday, it was simply in yet another story to make fun of, and this is where the sociological phenomenon kicked off of Chupacabra's T-shirts and Chupacabra's songs, like the one you just played, and it became simply a term of abuse and also a term of endearment on television shows. So city dwellers who'd never had direct experience or watched beloved pets or, you know, needed animals die a horrible death, could make light of it, and I think that's the case with all city dwellers.
Well, you know, I guess you could suggest when you watch a lion tear its prey apart, it's a horrible death. So in a way, if there's a chupacabra preying on animals, mainly, out there, how does it really differ from a lion that rips its prey apart? I mean, other than the fact that this obviously is a big mystery, it may be the paranormal, it may be UFOs or whatever, but it's still one animal killing another.
it seems to me that I'll just speak for the Puerto Rican reaction for a minute. This had happened before. People had been there, quote unquote, before in the 1970s with the Moca vampire, as it became known.
What was that?
It was a creature, was never seen. No drawings were made, no photos were taken. But it, for an entire year, probably 1974 to 75, it killed almost as many animals as the chupacabras. It had the same paranormal look and feel to it, and it later moved its activities to Santo Domingo, where it was also created, you know, great consternation among the peasantry.
Well, anything we don't understand, we are likely to ascribe to the paranormal. I mean, to us, it's magic, right? We don't understand it. No science explains it. So we either write it off and lie in reports, or, I'm trying to figure out. First of all, you do believe they're real, don't you? In other words,
I do. Okay. There's no doubt in my mind.
No doubt. But you lean toward the paranormal explanation.
Yes, indeed. Simply because of the way that the creature, as with other paranormal manifestations, actually we have the Moca vampire just mentioned,
right.
They seem to run a course of 12 months to 18 months. They appear, they kill animals, they create a sensation. Then the sightings either end abruptly or they peter out before being ignored by the media and ignored by the peasantry after a while. And this is exactly what happened to West Virginia's Mothman back in the 60s. It appeared for exactly 13 months before disappearing. It was never seen again in the area.
So, might these creatures be, here is another explanation, dimensional?
Well, I think the dimensional explanation would dovetail quite neatly with the paranormal. Because they would be coming in from another dimension, another level of energy, another reality, whatever term we want to give it. As opposed to being dropped here from another star system or being part of the cargo manifest of some downed UFO.
Well, think about this then. If it goes one way, maybe it goes the other. And maybe on the other side, these horrible creatures called dogs from time to time pop in. and cats. Oh my God, cats! Feral cats.
I'd hate to be on the other side to see them. So.
Yeah, there you are. In other words, things they have never seen on the other side.
But then again, if you want to add the third explanation, which seems to raise out of people's hackles, is simply black magic. Remember, sorcery is heavily practiced in the area, and as we have come to know. Certain ceremonies appear to be very effective in producing what are known as elementals or simply summonings.
Well, let me tell you something. This last weekend, nobody knows it, but I was in Mexico. Aha, how about that, folks? And we went into what we thought was a natural food store, and there was an altar there, Scott. Clearly, it was some sort of witchcraft that was being practiced. I did not stop. I did not ask. In fact, I got out of there rather quickly.
That was prudent, yes.
One portion of the store was devoted to some kind of an altar with some sort of a being or creature that was obviously being worshipped at the center. Do you have any idea what I might have seen?
No, that sounds, and I'm just taking a stab in the dark, sounds like a very benign Santeria altar.
Santeria, huh?
Yes.
Well, what was in the center of this altar did not look benign.
That I wouldn't know. That I wouldn't speculate. But yes, there are darker manifestations of Santeria, and they are practiced in the Caribbean, and certainly in Puerto Rico is no exception.
Do you believe in magic?
I've seen rituals perform, and I'm afraid that there's something to it.
Aha!
Uh-huh.
Give me an example of something you have seen.
I've simply seen the effect it's had on people present at ceremonies who had no connection whatsoever to this kind of worship. I've seen people who are skeptical, let's say detached observers, fall under the influence of, let's say, the rhythmical drum beating and so forth in a Santeria ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads me to believe, you know, I've, having been there, having not fallen under the spell of whatever was going on, that certain people either are quite susceptible to any kind of manipulation or that something was actually happening there.
Well, could it be that one of these ceremonies could bring some sort of elemental creature from there, wherever there is, to here?
That is certainly a possibility. When the more we learn about the ritual magic and what it's designed to accomplish, certainly that's one of the possibilities. However, I bring this up last, always, because of the reaction it has on most people. People don't mind hearing about government experiments or genetic freaks run amok or UFOs dropping things off in the countryside. But when it comes to the role of ritual magic in these things, people say, no, wait a minute, we've already gone beyond the fringe.
Well, I don't feel that way. I think it's entirely possible. Let me tell you something. There was a CNN USA poll done over the weekend, and 64%, I believe, of the American people say aliens have, in fact, in their opinion, contacted humans. Get this now. 80% of all Americans say they believe the U.S. government is hiding information on alien contact. That's 8 out of 10.
I'm not surprised. Not at all.
You're not?
No. Either, it doesn't matter, this is just a purely personal opinion, whether their perceptions are warranted or not. I think the media has played a crucial role in shaping this opinion. Simply, you know, our programs like the X-Files and what have you. The government is up to tricks. Things are being kept from us. And this is actually just a viewpoint.
So you think it's Hollywood that has formed this?
To a certain extent, the public reaction, yes. It does not detract from the phenomenon being real, however.
Well, as we get reports of microbial life in rocks from Mars, the likelihood of one of Jupiter's moons harboring life under what we now know to be or think to be a sea, water on the moon, all these other announcements, it's no wonder that people think they're being conditioned. I'm not so sure they're not. Stand by. We'll be right back to you.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
Humiliation.
Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired June 16th, 1997.
Scott Corrales is my guest. He knows about the Chupacabra and other mysteries. That is the title of his book, and we're going to talk to him a little more about the Chupacabra here in a moment.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. Open up your third eye with Coast to Coast AM and George Norrie.
I am now convinced that people who listen to this program have an even higher IQ. They truly want knowledge because they are different than most people.
And they are the people that have left themselves open. They don't put blinkers on. They are looking for information, and this is where they find it. So once again, I've got to compliment you for bringing this kind of programming to the masses, and that's a beautiful thing.
Now we take you back to the night of June 16th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Is there a creature, a winged creature, capable of attacking animals? And we do have hundreds, if not thousands, of bodies of animals with, get this, not just the blood, but in many cases, all the internal organs sort of sucked out of them through a little hole in their neck. That is what the chupacabra is said to be able to do. My guest is Scott Corrales. He wrote a book called Chupacabras and Other Mysteries. And Scott, are you there?
I certainly am.
All right. Has anybody ever recorded the sound of a chupacabra?
Not to the best of my knowledge, but I understand that it's supposed to be an absolutely, positively blood-curdling sound.
Mm-hmm. All right, I have what is considered to be, by most of the people in the field, the legitimate recorded sound of a Bigfoot. And I'm going to play that for you right now. Listen carefully to this because, you know, it is a sound. It could be a chupacabra. It could be a Bigfoot. It could be a chupacabra. It could be they're from the same family. Anyway, here it is. Well, there it is. You wouldn't want to meet that in the middle of the night, in the middle of the forest. No way.
Certainly not.
Now, that's a pretty horrible sound. Is that what people describe?
I would say that's pretty blood-curdling and awful to me, so I think it could be close. However, you now mentioned Bigfoot. There have been Bigfoot sightings in Puerto Rico as well.
Uh-huh.
And certainly, toward the... at the height of the Chupacabra sightings, there was also a Bigfoot attack on a human, or rather a sort of a tussle.
Well, see, here we are again. Now, the Bigfoot is variously said to be also something related to UFOs. Bigfoot is considered by many to be, in effect, a missing link, surviving as best it can. But, you know, it has the same qualities as a chupacabra in that it will disappear. Just psh, gone.
Absolutely. And certainly out here in Pennsylvania, we have our own Bigfoot sightings, and that sound has certainly, that you played is certainly a mainstay of many Bigfoot conventions and conferences out here. And it has the same qualities. It disappears. It appears not to behave as animals are supposed to behave. And I think most researchers are in agreement that, yes, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot, or the East Coast Bigfoot, if you will, is definitely not a physical creature.
Not a physical creature?
Not a physical creature. No, not at all.
So again, then, the paranormal or UFOs?
But in Puerto Rico, you have your, it has the almost unpronounceable name of Comecogollos, which means the eater of soft banana plants. I was seen back in the 80s and then seen again on and off. And it appears to be only interested in pursuing its little vegetarian habits. It's never really gone around killing any animals.
Vegetarians, they're fine.
But people have seen it. There have been photos taken of it. And, of course, it belonged to the blurry quality photo category.
Well, you know, I still think these things might have come out of labs somewhere. I've got this horrible feeling. I mean, I just know, Scott, I know. For example, right now in the Bahamas, despite what our president has said, there is a company that for $200,000 will clone a human being. Now, if they're doing that, imagine the experimentation that must have been going on privately in labs and by governments in places like Puerto Rico.
Well, I concur wholeheartedly there. Particularly, I think we were informed by television a couple of years ago to just the extent that genetic research had finally achieved. I remember people being completely shaken by a photo in Time magazine of a mouse with a human ear growing out of its back.
I've got that photograph, and I try not to look at it.
And this also dovetails with an article in the Russian magazine Ora Z concerning the research of Dr. Xian Kanchen. I'm just mutilated his name right there. And he apparently could, by radiation, superimpose chromosomes on different animals. So he was creating a half-rabbit, half-duck creature.
See, there we go. Now,
and no photographs of these creatures are available.
Yeah. Isn't it logical, then, that something would have been created in a lab someplace, and much like in Jurassic Park, one or two get loose, and that's all it takes?
It's certainly one of the theories. I don't think we should dismiss it out of hand. And certainly, if, let's say, breeding pair managed to make it into the wilderness, the powers that be would be very interested in finding out, you know, how they're making out and what its response are having on the population.
Tell me, is the chupacabra gone now? Are we getting any fresh reports, or is the creature gone?
The creature went into abeyance after January of 96. It then staged a resurgence in the spring and began mutilating animals and left a strong smell of sulfur wherever it went.
Sulfur?
To the point of nauseating media photographers and policemen, civil defense workers. Then it sort of just petered out, and researcher Willie Duran, who's down in Puerto Rico, tells me that, yes, they keep on getting cases, mutilations are still happening, but the creature has not been seen again. Just its handiwork.
What does that suggest?
To my mind, as I said, we go right back to the paranormal thing. These creatures tend to just either stop abruptly or peter out after a while. Or perhaps just reduce their level of activity to a maintenance level in which a number of animals are killed here and there. Little calling cards are left. If you recall when we started the show, I was telling you back in 1991, you already had reports of, let's say, a dozen goats being killed, 50 rabbits here, 50 ducks there.
Right.
And yet it never transcended to anything greater than that until 1995. So perhaps there's always a low level of animal mutilations going on, and that it simply reverted to this, what would you call it?
It's not unreasonable because, Scott, have you followed the way the Ebola virus operates? It suddenly emerges, good word, and kills a town, a city, an area, and then dies off, not to be heard from again, until the next outbreak. Kind of weird, huh?
It certainly is. It also has apparently a little refractory period of its own.
Exactly. And one can only imagine that it sits there and it waits for some contact by humans, or it becomes active in its own way at a certain point. We have no way of knowing about Ebola and why it comes and why it goes any more than we do the chupacabra.
And I think you can also, it does point to the cyclical nature. As if you go back to the Mocha vampire, how it appeared, how then it disappeared. We have chupacabras now in the mid-90s. Perhaps in the 2016s or thereabout, we're going to get another major outbreak of sightings, if it does seem to follow this pattern. it's certainly animal mutilations at large. I know that Linda Howe's written about this at length.
Mm-hmm.
Do follow a cyclical pattern over the decades. Outbursts throughout the world, repeating themselves in different countries, as if following a rotation of some sort.
Well, there is Santeria. Now, a lot of people say you can attribute these mutilations to devil worship of one sort or another. What do you say?
I say we cannot discount that possibility at all. Certainly, I know that one of the big concerns in Mexico, at least this concern was voiced by the director of the Chapultepec Zoo in Mexico City, was not as much that the chupacabras itself would attack their animals, but that certainly ritual worshippers would try to perform similar rites on zoo animals. And the zoo director pointed to a biblical passage in which a certain instrument is used, which produces a wound that could be quite similar to what chupacabras does. I can't recall exactly what her words were, but they were to that effect.
Well, so that is possible. In other words, there is a scientific way to do what this animal is said to do.
There certainly is. As I said, we cannot, at this point, I don't think it's, the healthiest thing to do is just consider every single alternative that's being postulated without subscribing to any particular one, because we may be wrong in the end, logically.
You remember you were joking a little while ago about the chupacabra not going after human beings because our blood might be too toxic for them?
That's correct, yes.
Is it not also possible that same toxic level might be producing these aberrations?
Well, if we're going to move into the realm of toxins, then we should also talk about radiation.
Sure.
The chupacabras has left a considerable radiation signature.
Aha! Uh-huh.
In Puerto Rico and in Guatemala.
Now, the first time I've heard this.
Well, this is, I guess, some information that I just acquired in recent months. Apparently, back in 1995, during the Orocovi stage of Chupacabras activity, civil defense workers were finding readings in excess of background radiation, which I believe is 10 rads, or 10 millirads. I'm not exactly sure of the measurement. And it was enough to prompt civil defense workers to say, let's get out of here, the situation is getting ugly.
Really?
However, they were quite remiss in not telling the farmers, you know, do not approach this animal, it's radioactive. Or it has been irradiated in some way, shape, or form. Now, Dr. Oscar Padilla in Guatemala, his research also turned up this radiation signature as left behind by this creature. And if we want to invoke, I guess, the paranormal again, or the interdimensional theory, rather, you have a theory posited by John Keel in 1978 in his book, The Eighth Tower, in which he says that these manifestations perhaps require a heavier element when they manifest in our dimension, and they choose a dense radioactive material, perhaps even plutonium. And as they break down from being in our own reality, they disintegrate and eventually do disappear. But they leave a considerable amount of radiation as they move along. Certainly, one of the main complaints voiced by stateside researchers was a lack of strong scientific information, let's say radiation readings, soil samples, blood samples, hair samples. And now we're getting information that, yes, indeed, there were Geiger counter readings. Yes, indeed, there were soil samples. Mm-hmm. Yes, you had people in Central America also conducting these things. But due to the fact that Latin America has gotten this terrible rap as the place where people have heads growing out from under their arms over the years, anything coming from south of the border seems to be cast aside, ridiculed, or just plain ignored.
There was a period of time, though, when people here stopped laughing, at least in the Southwest, because we began to experience mutilations that, in fact, had sightings of the chupacabra ourselves, some in California, New Mexico, Arizona, these areas. And so the laughter quieted down for quite a while. People didn't know what to make of it. But then that abated.
Well, that's certainly the healthy response. I think once people have been subjected to the phenomenon or know people who've suffered losses on account of it or may have even had sightings.
Americans really don't know. The truth of the matter is that when you go down into Mexico, the chupacabra is not at all treated the way it is here. We laugh, we joke, we make songs like the one I played. We make T-shirts and all the rest of it, and for that matter, some of that may be going on in Mexico, but the average Mexican is not humored at all by these stories, are they?
No, simply because of the periodicity of these things. These things have happened before. They've always happened. Certainly a country like Mexico has had this centuries-old tradition about shapeshifters,
Elementals,
the Nahuales, as they're called. This is not a laughing matter. People have always feared the village sorcerer, the village witch, mm-hmm. the person who can, quote-unquote, shed their skin and assume an animal form. So we can dismiss these things as folklore or just something for the anthropologist to write his PhD dissertation on. But this is something that people have always considered part and parcel of the reality. And in fact, this is something that Spanish investigator Salvador Clixedo has said for years. We have so many words in the vocabulary of every single country for elves, fairies, pixies, vampires, etc. So many words for creatures that ostensibly do not exist in every single language that it does make one wonder why we have all these words for things that are often dismissed as childish or just being the product of fantasy or what have you.
I remember when I was a kid, I thought there was a monster in the closet, and I still keep my closet door closed at night before I go to sleep because of that, Scott. Dumb, huh? That's a carryover from childhood. I still don't like open closets because I know there are things in there. And so one other possibility that I've always wondered about is the monster from the id. In other words, the possibility that we create our own monsters, or that it is possible. We know so little about the human brain. It is so powerful, it can do so many things that we don't know about, that is it not possible that, in effect, we create them ourselves?
Now, that's probably the most fascinating aspect of the phenomenon. Are we developing, let's say, the ability that the Tibetan monks allegedly have of creating tulpas, thought forms,
yes,
which are quite solid and can respond, can interact with physical creatures and leave an impression on the physical world around them?
Exactly.
That is a fascinating possibility. However, you can't tell a farmer that an archetype or creature from the id just punched a hole in one of its animals. So, that's a very hard one to get people to accept or even consider, but it's truly fascinating. If, as a society, we're now creating our own, very much like, and I hate to invoke science fiction, but the classic film Forbidden Planet, where a machine for generating creatures of the id was part of the plot of the movie.
Well, as I recall, the machine supplied the nearly endless amount of power that allowed the creation and maintenance of this creature, but it only supplied the power. It was the evil mind, you recall, of the man who lived on the planet, who was in effect creating this horrid monster.
Exactly. As I said, we cannot rule any possibility out at the moment. No matter how enticing some of these theories might seem, we should just keep an open mind.
All right. Well, what I'm going to do is open some phone lines and let people ask you questions. How about
very
that?
Very good. I'd be
delighted. All right, good. That's coming up next. Now, as you may have noted, we began early tonight, as we will every night from now on, at 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 a.m. Eastern. Scott Corrales is my guest. His book is Chupacabras and Other Mysteries. And indeed, mysteries they are. If you have questions, we're going to open the lines coming next.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. I've got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman. She's trying to make a devil out of me. Turn your back on me, baby.
Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
My guest is Scott Corrales. He's talking about the Chupacabra. Not many people do, publicly. He's talking about that and other mysteries. That would be the title of his book coming out shortly. We'll get to him and your questions about these strange creatures, not limited to the Chupacabra by any means, in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
All right, here we go. My guest is Scott Corrales. We're talking about the Chupacabra. Very, very ugly creature indeed, and other similar mysteries. And as we go back to him and your calls in a second, I got this fax from Randy. Art, what is going on? There have been 5 tornadoes in Oklahoma City, winds to 75 miles an hour here in Arkansas, and 2 more tornadoes in Texas. The weather is not the same anymore. Well, of course, Randy, I agree with you. Now, there have always been tornadoes in Oklahoma. That is not unusual. But there is no question about the fact that our weather is changing and quickening, if you will. That's the title of my book, of course. Plug, plug. I'll tell you how to get it after a while here. I would like to ask you about that, Scott. There is something going on, some environmental change going on, that is reflected not just by the possible presence of chupacabras and whatever else, but there's a larger thing going on, a change, basic profound change in our weather, in our environment. New diseases are popping up, things that are killing fish off the East Coast. The Antarctic ice shelf, one of them getting ready to drop off into the water. A lot of very unusual environmental things, ozone depletion, the rest of it, all going on at once. And it all seems to be quickening. Is it possible that these strange creatures are some kind of product of this change?
That certainly has always come to mind. I mean, we seem to be having all the signs of the times. Not only applicable to Judeo-Christian religion, but to other millennial religions as well. Certainly, people who, let's say, read the Book of Revelation, etc., have drawn parameters between what was going to happen, strange creatures being seen, etc. And there's certainly the possibility that this could also be chupacabras and Bigfoot-like creatures and your pterodactyls that manifest every so often could be part of this.
All right, let's go to the phones. First time caller line, you are on the air with my guest, Scott.
I just wanted to ask him, what does he think, like, what bothers me about this, like that thing and Bigfoot and whatnot, is that they seem to cough up here and then suddenly they're in California and
that's right.
Somewhere else and here or there. I'm just wondering, how much do you think it might be people propagating a legend.
A legend, all right. Where are you, by the way?
I'm in Edmonton, Alberta, Art. I'm listening to you out of Como.
All right, aside from my discussions on the air about the chupacabra and these other things, have you heard about them otherwise?
Yeah, up here in British Columbia and that.
I think what people are hearing on the media and the press is usually the humorous, the dismissive stories, which in no way would lead people to begin conducting hoaxes on their own. Aside from the photo hoaxes, which are ubiquitous in, you know, these days of all kinds of scanning technology in the home and all these things, there have been no hoaxes. You certainly have had a lot of colorful characters, like the psychic I mentioned earlier in the show, dropping their two cents and saying that they're from this planet, that planet, they will not eat, drink human blood, etc. But outright hoaxes, I don't believe we've had any thus far.
Okay, all right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
Yeah, Art?
Yes.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm calling from Reading. That last fellow that talked from British Columbia?
Yes.
I can take it down a little bit further south. I used to live with the Quileute Indians in Forks, Washington.
Yes.
I'm a trucker, and I hauled their fish. They're a fishing village. And I asked one time about Bigfoot down in that area, and they said, yeah, we have sightings all the time, but we just don't noise it around. We're tired of being laughed at.
Right.
Well, I have an incident to relate to you. The reservation cop and I were pretty good friends, and the night before all of this, the big happening, they had gone to dinner, the Coast Guard commander and his wife, and Joe and his wife, the reservation cop, of course. And coming back that night about 9:30, there's a hard right-hand turn into the reservation on a little one-and-a-half-lane blacktop road, and this big hairy critter ran across the road. Joe got him in his spotlight, stopped his car. He was in his prowl car, and he stepped back to the pickup behind him, which was a Coast Guard pickup, and he asked the guy in the pickup, did you see anything? He says, well, I can't really be sure. So they let it go. The next morning, two little kids were playing on a bend in the river where it took its last turn before it went out to the ocean. And they were throwing rocks at some big critter across in the bushes across the river. It was quite a ways. The rocks never got to him, and the big guy, he'd kind of half-heartedly throw one back.
Mm.
But he was on a spot of ground that was bordered on one side by the blacktop road to a public parking area to go to the beach, which was a reservation border. The beach access was public land, and then the river divided the public land from the reservation. Well, here came a car. The big guy heard it, and he stood up, and these two little kids, the next thing Joe knows, he's got them in his office, and they're practically incoherent. And he related this to me. I didn't see it firsthand, of course, and that's when I began asking around about, they call them Sasquatch up there.
Right.
And all over the Northwest, you hear the same thing from the local folks up there, that they have sightings all the time.
Well, I've got an idea. Let us ask our guest. Scott, we've got a lot of Bigfoot sightings in the Northwest. Are there in Mexico, in Spanish lands, around the world, for that matter, of what we call Bigfoot?
Yes, we certainly do. In fact, one of the chapters of Chupacabras and Other Mysteries is devoted to that subject. You have the Sasquatch-like creature called the Ucumarsupay, which is in the Andes between Chile and Argentina.
What is that? How do they describe it?
They describe it as a simian, 8-foot-tall, hairy creature. It's also in the mythology of the area. People feel that it's a gentle giant, just as specific people in the Northwest feel about Bigfoot. And certainly there has been evidence gathered by zoologists over the years that such a creature does exist at the higher reaches of the Andes. If you move into Amazonia in Brazil, you start getting reports of gigantic simians or humanoids, pre-human creatures, which could also be part of the Bigfoot tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Puerto Rico, as I said, has had reports of the Comecogollos since the 80s, or out of the 70s, actually. Mexico has also had, this is interesting about Mexico, is its two mountain chains, the Sierra Madre, both on the east and the west, are very poorly explored mountains. And people are quite proud of the fact, actually, that these mountains have never been explored.
In other words, there are areas, you're telling me, where man really has never gone in Mexico?
That's absolutely correct. And people consider it a point of pride that these things have never been properly investigated. And certainly, creatures like that could be living in there. If you move into Central America, you have a smaller simian creature, the Sisamite, which is in Belize and Honduras. So, yes, you do have this tradition of Sasquatch-like creatures spreading all the way down to South America. Certainly, there's a Bigfoot of the Pyrenees between France and Spain. So is this simply a creature that chooses mountains as its habitat?
I don't know. Gee whiz, God, I thought every square inch of everywhere had been tromped upon by man.
That is, I think we all think that. I think it was the late Ivan Sanderson who pointed out to the fact that cartographers, map makers play fast and loose with the data they have at hand. They'll cover an area, so many grids from the air. They'll send someone in there, take a couple of measurements, but no one will ever go into the heart of things.
So there's lots of land that man has not yet walked upon, and who knows what might be there.
Precisely.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
Hi, my name is Ramona.
Ramona.
Uh-huh.
Nice name.
I know. It's your wife's name, too.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I've been listening to you. I'm very concerned, and I'm interested in Scott's, what he's talking about, because I have seen, they've had several features on different television shows about this, and they have shown, tried to show pictures of what this Chupacabra looks like.
Chupacabra. And
yeah.
And by the way, Scott, is that right? They have a drawing that is pretty well universally accepted. It's what this lady is talking about, of what the Chupacabra looks like.
That's correct. That would be Jorge Martin's drawing that he did back in 1995.
Is that the best?
That seems to be the one closest to the truth, to the actual descriptions rather than the truth. I've seen a number of drawings of the creature.
Well,
and I've seen the numbers held up to number of witnesses. They say, no, that the closest one seems to be the original drawing.
Because they look almost like, you know, like aliens. And as you were talking before about all the different storms and the activities and the different tornadoes and stuff, I'm from Westfield, Massachusetts, believe it or not.
Okay.
I don't know if you know where that is.
I don't, but that's okay.
You ever hear of Hartford?
Of course. Oh, of course.
Okay, it's on the other side of Springfield.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right. It's not too far from the Berkshires.
Okay.
And every now and then, I know I've heard you hear about sightings of UFOs and stuff. I have actually seen sightings of strange lights, too. But the thing that gets me about this is it seems to me that you did have a subject one time about the mutating frogs.
Oh, yes.
And I'm wondering if these could be possibility of mutation.
Oh, there's absolutely no question about it. Thank you. That's what I was talking about earlier. What I call the quickening. One aspect of it is the environmental changes. We have frogs that are mutating, extra legs. I've got a photograph of a frog with an eye in its throat. In some areas of the upper Midwest now, they cannot find normal frogs. They're nearly all mutated. We've got single-celled and simple creatures in the Antarctic now being so affected that they have detected genetic change in the DNA strand. There's some pretty strange stuff going on. So that an animal like this could be produced by changes that are naturally or not so naturally occurring on Earth, not a surprise, huh, Scott?
Not at all, certainly. I don't know of any creature, however, that leaves a radiation signature that's above background radiation. So my contention would be that, well, it's possible that it could be a genetic mutation.
Well, yes, but radiation may have had something to do with its creation.
You can't put that possibility aside either, no, you certainly can't. Nonetheless, I tend to incline to the fact that if it's leaving that kind of radiation amount, you're dealing with something completely beyond the pale.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
This is Fritz from Phoenix.
Hi, Fritz.
I have been following the Chupacabra mystery with great interest for the last 3 years. It made the headlines, I would say, even in the mainstream media
right.
So fast. Of course, Art, you had a lot to do with your program to give it the exposure. And that's, of course, positive because the world would never know. It took Bigfoot 30 years to go up front, and here the chupacabra comes in 3 years so fast. Now, I myself going through the process of elimination, but it's very difficult from the living room to do that. Now, it seems, in my opinion, there's definitely an intelligence dropping the chupacabra from counter to counter. And I want to ask Scott, the question is, how is it possible that it can be dropped? Is there any evidence now, video? I mean, a lot of people have video cameras nowadays. Is there a possibility to set a ring of watches out with video cameras to see how these this mystery moves around? And if there's a connection with UFO, because everything points to it, but of course that's just speculation.
You know, I believe that in January of 96, there was a project set up in Puerto Rico to somehow involve a network of night vision equipment and camcorders to be triggered at a certain time. And I'm not sure what the outcome of that project was, but certainly efforts have been made in that direction. Now, however, one of the main complaints, though, that's been echoed, I think, since the situation started, is why don't people have more of the camcorders in Puerto Rico, etc.? And I think the main contention here is, yes, people have as much access to still cameras, camcorders, what have you, but it's not a shutterbug society.
Well, listen, whether it is or not, let me tell you something. I have now seen two UFOs. Both times, I kicked myself silly after seeing the things. One, particularly, not very long ago here at home, I could have run in and grabbed my 8mm, which had a good zoom on it, and it didn't occur to me. You know why? Because when you're in the middle of something like that, you're absolutely frozen. And as much as a disc in the sky froze me, Scott, I can only imagine that to see something like the chupacabra, not only would you be, it would be fight or flight time, or you'd be frozen in place with victim tattooed on your forehead. It's hard to know which, but you'd be not inclined to reach for a camera.
Exactly. I would second that motion, certainly.
And only people who have seen something like this and understand the way it immobilizes you can understand why there are not a lot of photographs taken.
However, the contention keeps on, it arises every time. Why are there no photos? Why do we keep on having drawings and artists' renderings? Why aren't there any photos? What about Mexico? What about this? What about here? What about there? And all we can produce is, let's say, the cold light of day. It's handiwork. We keep on seeing the dead animals. Yet, perhaps someday, one of these camera arrays will work and deliver us images, hopefully, video footage as opposed to still footage of the creature carrying out its actions.
Well, suppose they were to set up night vision equipment and video recorders and all the rest of it and cameras, and they actually caught an image of one of these. How do you think that would affect society, particularly Spanish society?
I think Spanish society would be simply, yes, we told you so, here it is. The United States' reaction would just be, well, it's a hoax. Obviously, that's a man in a suit. It's some sort of virtual reality.
Right.
And computer-generated. So you could never convince the skeptics or the scientific community who has, they have PhDs writing on this to...
So a photograph is not going to really be sufficient for all these, I'll put it in quotes, civilized people up north here.
No, a photograph is going to sell a lot of newspapers and a lot of magazine articles, but it's not going to convince anyone.
You're quite correct. They're going to say it is somebody in a suit, or they're going to say it is a photographic manipulation. And frankly, that's true of any photograph of any unusual phenomena, from ghosts to UFOs to photographs of creatures and all the rest of it. We have come into an age where nobody is going to believe a damn thing, photograph or not. So, next question. With regard to Bigfoot, there is a reputable scientist in the Northwest who says the first Bigfoot that we can kill, we should kill. And then there should be the death penalty for anybody who would kill a second one. In other words, he's saying, in effect, we want one so that we know we've got this creature. We put it on the endangered species list. We examine it, we dissect it, we cut it into little pieces and find out what makes it tick, and then we kill no more.
I've heard that contention, and certainly you have the argument that until you kill one, no one will know that it's real. You have the opposing view, which is we're talking about a sentient creature
yes.
in any way, shape, or form.
Yes.
We're killing one of our relatives, in fact, one of our primate relatives.
Uh-huh. So what would you say of those two views, which one would you embrace?
Oh, that's between the pit and the pendulum there.
Yes.
I would have to advocate perhaps the actual downing of a Bigfoot, having to kill one.
Take one down.
To be able to just prove to the world, scientific community and the media at large, yes, it does exist. And I think this the same would apply to any abnormal creature.
Uh-huh. So take one down, prove it exists, and then what? Add it to the endangered species list? Or begin to worry about the future of humanity generally?
It's a consolation prize to add it to the endangered species list. It doesn't do it any good, though.
All right, Scott, hold on. We'll do one more hour. Phones are going nuts here, so stand by. Scott Corrales is my guest. He has the background and has done the research on the Chupacabra and other similar mysteries. So if you have questions about these weird creatures, and I guess in a way it also involves Bigfoot, and this whole range of creatures that seem to come and go in a most horrific way, here we are.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997. Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
My guest is Scott Corrales. He has authored a book called Chupacabras and Other Mysteries. He knows about such things. His background includes such things. He has investigated for years monsters, things you would not want to meet in the middle of the night. Things that sound like this. We'll get back to them in a moment.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now, you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Open up your third eye with Coast to Coast AM and George Norrie.
I am now convinced that people who listen to this program have an even higher IQ. They truly want knowledge because they are different than most people.
And they are the people that have left themselves open. They don't put blinkers on. They are looking for information, and this is where they find it. So, once again, I've got to compliment you for bringing this kind of programming to the masses, and that's a beautiful thing.
Now we take you back to the night of June 16th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Now back to Scott Carella. Scott has been investigating things like the Chupacabra and other monster mysteries for many, many years. And so if you have any questions, come now. Scott, are you there?
I certainly am.
All right. We'll do one more hour, and lots of people apparently want to talk about this. So to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank you. Where are you?
Fallsview, West Virginia.
All right.
It's in the Panhandle.
Right.
Okay. First thing I'd like to say, I love your site. It's the top bookmark on my account.
All right. Yes, it's a good website.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm talking to my parents about getting web TV, too.
Good for you.
Okay. My question is, let's try this again.
Okay.
Where in the United States have these been cited, I mean, as far as up? You know, how far up have they been cited in the United States?
That's a very good question.
When you say, well, let's qualify they. What do you mean by they? Chupacabras?
Chupacabras, yeah.
Chupacabras, all right.
Right, I thought that was going to be easy, but for the caller meant. They started having mutilations. Then the Hialeah area.
As a matter of fact, may I stop you, Scott, and then you can answer the rest of the question. There was an animal that attacked a car north of Miami somewhere, and it put actual deep scratches in the bumper of the car. Did you hear about that?
I certainly did. That was researched by Dr. Virgilio Sanchez, whose little book on the Chupacabras in Florida has just come out. It moved north, then it moved west from Florida. We started getting the sightings in Texas, then New Mexico, Arizona, California. Finally, it moved as far north as Oregon, as far as I know. However, it never moved farther north on the eastern seaboard. The phenomenon then quickly moved overseas to thrill, no doubt, people in Spain and in Portugal. And it kept on moving south into South America, but no reliable information is available from either Colombia or Venezuela.
Well, there are those who would be suspicious that the Chupacabra, other than its brief sojourn into the States, is seen mainly in Spanish-speaking areas.
That has often been remarked. Is this just a...
Spanish phenomenon.
A figment of the Spanish, Hispanic-American mentality, or
right,
something prone to Spanish-speaking populations? I don't think so. I think it's an equal opportunity phenomenon. I think if you happen to be in an area where it's taking place, you stand a good chance of seeing it. Notwithstanding.
Okay, but is there any cultural propensity that you could explain that would begin to enter that area saying, well, it is mainly a Spanish kind of thing?
You you could say that, yes, as we mentioned earlier in the show, that there is a greater acceptance of the paranormal, the supernatural, in Latin society, perhaps because of an African influence to deal with as well, and that's the supernatural is certainly a West African thing.
Well, we know that UFO sightings are so common in Mexico City that people have begun to take them for granted and just sort of going, oh, there's another one.
See, that was a case when I lived there in the 70s. We had our own equivalent down there of the 1973 Year of the Humanoids we were having in the States, and it got to the point where UFOs were simply a matter of curiosity more than anything a matter of admiration. People stopped paying attention and said, well, yes, these things are real, and they may be from another planet, from another dimension, and mm-hmm. you'll know.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Where are you, sir?
St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
Kind of the heart of Bigfoot country.
Sure is.
Yeah, I was wondering, St. Louis is a place that's building out, and as our community kind of branches out into what used to be wooded areas, have there been any reports of a Bigfoot like wandering through a subdivision?
I recall back in the 70s there were
stories
in Florida.
Oh, really?
In Hialeah. I remember that it was seen parading through the backyards. I believe it was Lauren Coleman who researched that information.
It is interesting as we move into areas that we have not been in before. For example, in South America, it is said you can see the fires in the rainforests as we burn them down. From space, they are so severe. And so we're constantly moving man into areas where man has never been before, and maybe in a lot of areas, as you pointed out earlier, where man has never walked before. So
exactly.
Should we be surprised that we see things that man has never seen before?
Well, we know that when we stir up ecosystems that have never been disturbed, we come up with things like the Ebola virus and Lassa fever and all these other strange viruses,
exactly.
which we have no immunity, resistance, certainly.
Exactly. There is a new virus off the East Coast now of America. As a matter of fact, I've got another report on it this morning. And what it does is it goes to the bottom of fresh or salt water, and it waits. And when enough toxins enter the water, it is activated, and it begins killing fish first. And then it begins making people sick. And it's one of those things that you might speculate has always been there, but, you know, the conditions were not quite right for it to flourish. But the minute the right toxins get in the water, suddenly it's activated, and there it is.
It serves as a catalyst, then, to bring these things
back. A catalyst. Ah, thank you. That's the word. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi. Hello there. Going once, going twice. Gone. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Chris. I'm calling from Tacoma.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah, first, I had a couple questions and then one short comment, but I was just wondering, I was curious, how many years does the chupacabra go back to?
Good question.
The chupacabras is a recent phenomenon in the incarnation to which it's been it's been known. It's from 1995. If back to the 70s, you'll see similar activity, but there was no creature ever associated with it.
Because I was wondering as far as reproduction, because I get the impression that when the Sasquatch and the Chupacabra is being talked about, it's talked about singly, like a Chupacabra or a Sasquatch. And I was
mm-hmm.
wondering, they must be reproducing or at some point, what would their lifespan be? I mean, they would either have to die off like anything.
Well, that's actually, you know, we've been talking about that. In other words,
yeah.
Have you noticed they appear, they are a problem, and then they are gone again for a while? Now, I'm not sure what that suggests, but I understand where you're coming from with your question. And I think the last thing we would want is for these things to begin to reproduce in a prolific manner.
That is certainly undesirable. Chupacabras has been seen in groups of three or four and certain parts of Puerto Rico, so we know there's a plurality of beings. as opposed to a single one that appears in different locations. Whether it's a natural creature, I doubt that any natural creature emits a smell akin to battery acid.
Battery acid.
Battery acid has been mentioned. Malathion, the pesticide, has been mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Strong, acrid chemical odors are left behind by this creature.
Well, if I were to see three chupacabras, there would be nothing further to worry about for me because I'd faint. And then they'd have their way with me, I suppose. First time caller line, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Carolyn in Seattle.
Hi.
My question fits into the realm of other kind of mysteries.
Okay.
I wanted to ask Scott if he knew whether or not he heard anything about people with, this is my situation, waking up in the morning with different kinds of brands. My children call them brandings. They're like shapes of squares, circles, triangles, and they're...
On your body?
Yes, from anywhere on my back to my neck, and they last for about 3 months. They're completely numb. They look like they are raised marks that look like they've been severe burns, and they have deep bruises in the center.
Wow.
And there's no feeling at all to these areas.
In other words, there is the possibility you have been attacked by something in the night.
Right. The first time I saw this, I have a king-size waterbed. I came in my room. I just tore my bed to pieces trying to find what I had slept on.
Sure.
And, you know, I've had children ranging from the age of 24 to 16, and I have a husband I've been with for 20 years, and a grandchild, and we all look at these things, and we all, you know, there's just no explaining that.
May I ask a personal question?
Yes.
Do you sleep with your husband?
My husband is a merchant seaman, so he's gone often. These have come up when he's been here, and, you know, it's just the strangest thing.
So many times you're a lonely target.
Right. Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Most of the time. He's been home the last year for about 6 weeks. So I'm at a place where I'm wondering if Scott has been aware of anyone else.
Okay. All right. Good question. It comes under the area of other mysteries for sure. Scott?
I really wish I could be more helpful. This sounds like a very, very serious matter. It would fall more into the realm of poltergeists. Poltergeistic phenomena where welts are left on the skin, impressions left on the skin, or what is now being covered under abduction studies.
Well, you know, I did call Peter Davenport here in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
and he put me in touch with a doctor here who does this as a side kind of thing. He has very limited time that he can invest in this, and so he asked me to keep a journal for a year.
Keep a journal?
Yeah, pictures and journals. What happens is, in the mornings, I started noticing a pattern. I call it, it's difficult for me to talk about this because I really haven't.
No, I understand. Listen, I'll tell you what. Have you also been taking photographs?
Yes.
You have?
Yes. The triangles are very, very clear and specific. The squares are very, very clear. The circles are very clear for about a month. And then they start fading away.
I know. I think I've got the picture. What I'm asking is, don't send me originals, but could you send some photographs?
I could. Yes, I could. The thing that I've gotten, I haven't even paid very much attention. I've got one now that faded about 3 weeks ago, lasted about 3 to 4 months. And as they fade, they break up into patterns of circles. But, you know, even after they fade, I still have numbness there. All over my back, I have numb places.
All right. I would very much like to see some photographs.
Yes, okay.
Send them to me, all right?
All right.
All right, thank you.
Best of luck.
Best of luck indeed. Wow. East of the Rockies, you are on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
Yes, good morning, Art. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Well, let me just say, first of all, Art, you have some very interesting topics. And,
thank you.
I drive truck at night, and you definitely keep me looking over my shoulder with some of your topics there.
This ought to do it. Yes, where are you, by the way?
I'm in Mendota, Illinois, currently making a stop in the town here.
Okay.
You know, you talk a lot about, we got on the subject earlier, you guys were talking a little bit about aliens, possibilities of cover-ups with the government and not letting people possibly know about them. Scott, do you ever have the fear, all the work and the effort and the time that you put into this, that if one is ever found alive or dead, that there's a possibility that, you know, nobody could ever know about this, and it would take years to unravel, so to speak, as the UFOs have come along in that?
It's a good point. In other words, let's say we find a body, or we have found one, or let's say that we have captured one alive. Isn't it probable, Scott, that the military would descend, they would take the creature, it would disappear to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base or someplace or another, and we would never see it?
Almost certainly. But I'd like to, the way I see UFO research right now, and particularly the work that I've compiled on what's going on in Latin America, we seem to be gathering evidence, all our research, all our material, for the benefit of future generations who will perhaps be in a better position to understand the phenomenon. Much like electricity was of no use to Benjamin Franklin. He was fooling around with the concept. It would have to wait another century before it was useful to someone. And I think that's the thing with ufology. We are creating the reference books that our great-great-great-grandchildren will look back to for the early information on the phenomenon when they're in a position to solve the mystery. So I think even if a body were discovered and the information were concealed, somehow those government reports would eventually surface in the future. And it's a phenomenon that's going to be for the benefit of future generations. It's very important that we document everything, we preserve all the information we have to that end.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Gorelis. Hi.
How you doing, Art? My name is Steven. I'm calling from Chicago.
Hi, Steven.
One of the questions I'd like to ask Scott is, and this is something that you've been talking about a lot with your quickening, it's, are these animals, like the chupacabra, the Sasquatch, are they simply animals that have already been here for eons?
Right.
And that because we're simply going into their territory, that we're seeing them more often?
It's highly unlikely. But we cannot dismiss the possibility that as we move into virgin forest areas in our search for minerals and other resources, we're drilling deep into the earth, we're going into caves, it could be possible that these creatures form part of our physical reality. However, why do they leave these radiation signatures? Why do they emit these acrid chemical odors?
This is the first time I have ever heard about the radiation signatures. That's really weird.
It certainly is. It's very disturbing.
And then you mentioned one other thing, Scott, that caught my attention. You said we're drilling deeper into the earth. In fact, we are. And is it just possible that some of these creatures may be coming up from underground?
That notion has been set forth a couple of times. It's the alleging, well, a creature has luminous eyes, it could live underground.
Exactly.
What would it survive on living underground? Well, that's also open to speculation. But drilling ever deeper for more oil, for minerals, certainly Puerto Rico has supplies of copper and other valuable metals, and there's consideration that they're going to be exploited.
Mm-hmm.
Test pits could have been dug, and this thing could have come out.
Up and out. Boy. All right, Scott, stand by. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. Scott Gorelis is my guest. His book, coming out shortly, is called Chupacabras and Other Mysteries.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
Thank you.
Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired June 16, 1997.
Chupacabras and Other Mysteries is the book. Scott Corrales is the author and the investigator. If you'd like to talk to him, that's what telephones are for. All busy at the moment, but get in as you can.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now, you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Weird stories on the radio? Must be Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts and things like that.
Yeah.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was a little wary about these, other than the Kennedy assassination. And all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you two?
Yeah, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here? And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And today, I don't believe the government story of 9/11. Here's the 3 options. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen, or we knew about it and participated in it, or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. And I started to think they knew it was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
Now we take you back to the night of June 16th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Back now to Scott Corrales, who is in Pennsylvania, where it's getting very early in the morning, I guess.
That's right.
There are not many people like you, Scott. There's Linda Moulton Howe. She was hot on the track of the Chupacabra for a while. Who would you say are the top investigators in the area?
Well, I'd like to begin by saying you mentioned that I was the investigator. I like to see myself just as the chronicler. The credit for the investigation goes to the unsung researchers in Puerto Rico, like Federico Alvarez, Willie Duran, Jorge Martin, and people just selflessly devoted themselves for months to going into these areas, talking to the witnesses.
Exactly.
And ultimately to the witnesses themselves for coming forward.
Do they? All right, then here's a good question. Do the researchers come to similar conclusions? In other words, that there is something real here, that it is not a myth, that something really is killing these animals. Have they all come to the same conclusion, or do they vary?
They all agree on the reality of the phenomenon.
Uh-huh.
I think, by and large, they do agree on its origin. I think most of
Puerto Rico,
the Puerto Rican researchers, believe that it's an extraterrestrial phenomenon in some way related to the strong presence of allegedly alien beings on the island. As I said, you could write an entire book.
Again, Scott, people used to, scoff a lot at this sort of thing, but here we have a survey done this last weekend by CNN and USA Today that shows that 8 out of 10 Americans believe the U.S. government is hiding information about contact with aliens. That's 8 out of 10. that's a higher percentage than support abortion, for example. As a matter of fact, 8 out of 10 is rarely taken as agreement. Well, I think we had it in the Gulf War, maybe. But Americans rarely agree to that percentage on anything. So I thought that was amazing. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
Hi, I'm so excited to get on. Hi, Scott. This
is Hi,
Richard.
I'm
investigating the Chupacabras. I moved to Puerto Rico in 95, and the Chupacabras has been a part of my life. Not exactly personal, but, you know, just being exposed to it. It's interesting that the indigenous people there had a myth of a bat-like creature that represented death, and it was called Ibiri. And also another thing geographically about the island is that it's just a great big catacomb. When I was there, I went to classes, and I did some cave exploring, and there's this one place called Camuy where there are 2,000 caves in the area, and only 200 have been explored.
Right.
And it's just a great big catacomb. Anything can be down there. And the fact
that
it's indigenous.
That actually, very few people know about the Camuy cave system. It's about 40 kilometers long.
Yes, I swam through a couple of those myself. And I know that it could be anything out there. And I'm sure that these farmers are not killing off their goats. They're very expensive on the island. They wouldn't just be killing off their goats for no reason. Another thing is the UFO connection there, Arecibo's satellite sending out messages to aliens, you know, waiting for an answer. Maybe we got one. And there's also a experimentation place there, a military animal experimentation place. And a lot of the people feel that there might be a connection there, some kind of genetic. Some people, you know, have described it as a monkey, but I don't think we have blood-sucking monkeys that I know of. But, you know, it's just, and the animals don't get rigor mortis after they're dead. They do not get rigor mortis. I mean, that's what I heard on the television over in Puerto Rico when I was there. And what's interesting is that, you know, I went there and I came back. I took a Greyhound bus from Florida back all through the southern part of the country up to, and I live near Oregon now. This thing is like following me or something. It's kind of funny. Yeah, my kids love the story. My son has written a book about it, and it's a great mythology to know, but it's also very, very old. In the 70s and in the 50s, there were stories of, you know, vampire creatures on the island. And it's part of the culture, really, a mythology. And it's really possible that these things could have come up from the center of the earth with so many caves that have not been explored there. And but the military thing and the alien thing, you know, there's the Arecibo.
Well, it seems as though everybody, thank you, agrees they exist, and nobody agrees on where they come from, because we just don't know.
That remains the prize-winning question, where do they come from? But as the caller just pointed out, yes, the Taino Indians had a number of legends. Certain creatures like the Maboya, I believe, is one of the entities. And yes, there's very much a folkloric background for some of these sightings. But Chupacabras itself appears to be a recent development. And I don't see it collected anywhere in the history books, at any rate. Not the ones that I've had access to.
Mm-hmm. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm in Montana, western Montana.
Well, all right.
And we've had Sasquatch sightings here, too. And I've been doing a lot of reading, and I've got a question, and it involves two areas. One is with the germs and the animals dying and so forth, and the other involves the sightings of the Sasquatch.
Yes.
Okay, dating back to World War One, there's been ongoing research to develop a germ or a bacterium or toxin that would be extremely toxic. You couldn't kill it.
Okay.
And the United States and Great Britain, Germany, Japan, Russia are all involved in developing this thing.
Of course.
And they have done experimentation off of the East Coast that I'm aware of in the early 50s. And since then, you know, the alligators and crocodiles down in Florida area, they've lost their ability to reproduce. So there's been sea animals and so forth all over on both coasts that have shown up dead. There's birds showing up dead.
I know.
Inland. And
I know.
Forth.
These are all environmental difficulties that are plaguing us. But I just had a thought, Scott. Let's say that something like the chupacabra is created in a laboratory.
Right.
If that's the case, it may be that we have created a new animal genetically. Maybe we have created something that has no natural way to live on this planet. In other words, it has no natural prey. It has no natural food. It has no natural way to reproduce. So it escapes from a lab. It does a lot of damage, and then it dies. Possible?
That's, of course, as long as we continue discussing the subject of genetics, certainly, and an escapee from a lab. However, there's been no huge manhunt for the creature that I can tell. Of course, there were rumors that the creature had, in fact, been captured by the civil defense in the early weeks of the phenomenon, the Puerto Rican stage of the phenomenon. But nothing ever came of that. It just remained hearsay, which unfortunately there's been too much of in the whole phenomenon, but that's what we're dealing with.
Well, as I said, if one were captured, I think it very unlikely the military would go and get it and take it away, and they would dissect it, trying to find out if it was alien or what it was, if they weren't the ones that created it.
And they're trying to see how it works.
That's exactly right. And cut it into little pieces, I'm sure. First time caller line, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, where are you?
I'm calling from Colorado.
Yes, sir.
Yes, a year ago I had met a gentleman that had came to Colorado at a UFO conference, and he had a lot of outstanding photographs. And he showed me a picture of what he said was a chupacabra.
And what did it look like?
It sort of looked like a bat. It was in mid-flight, and you could make out characteristics on its face. And I looked at a lot of the local drawings that people had had that saying that claiming they were chupacabras, and some of the features didn't quite match up to what the...
Do you have a copy of this photograph?
I could call him and see if I could get permission to send it to you.
Would you do that?
Yes.
You know me in photographs of creatures.
You can make out details on it, and a lot of people have looked at it. And at the conference in Denver, a lot of people had looked at it and scrutinized it, but because of the detail, they seemed that it was very good.
All right.
They didn't question it in any way.
You know my address, right?
Yes.
All right. Send it to me immediately.
Okay, I certainly will.
All right, thank you. I post these things, and you never know what's fraudulent and what's real. But I put them up there, Scott, and I let people look at them and decide for themselves.
Well, it's fascinating. During the Mexican stage of the phenomenon, a couple of fishermen, I think, mutilated a cat or and somehow cut it open to give it wings. And that was paraded in the Mexican newspapers of Chupacabras for a couple of weeks.
The winged cat.
That's right.
You know what? I think I saw a photograph of that thing.
It's been making the rounds still.
That's
a year later.
Horrible. That's horrible. They cut open a cat to give it wings?
It's astounding what will go on. But people will sometimes sink to chupacabras-like levels.
Oh, yes. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Scott Corrales. Hello.
Yes, this is Chuck from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hi, Chuck.
Have an interesting story about a chupacabra and UFO connection.
All right.
A friend of mine and I had... Actually, it was me that heard the newscast from a local TV station about a man who had had some sort of encounter. And at that particular time, I'd really just heard, you know, bits and pieces about the chupacabra.
Now, wait a minute. Now, I heard that. Was that near Nashville?
Yeah, it was in the Orlando community.
Yes,
just outside of Springfield, Tennessee.
Yes, yes. And
we
investigated
that before the MUFON organization showed up.
And what did you find?
Oh, very interesting. What really got my attention was the news media, local news media, had to rerun the story because the gentleman got a little upset because they portrayed him as the stereotypical good old boy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with his dog and such. The man had was a carpenter, and they lived out in the country. He had two small boys, and what was interesting is when we went out there, he started to go in the house because at that time he was being inundated. He had had a veterinarian to come out and check his dog, and the veterinarian had didn't make any comment about any marks. The marks that we saw on this particular dog were not that of an animal or a chupacabra, but at that time we didn't know what it was. He had described these strange lights and also had a UFO that was reported above him during this hysterical situation. My outtake on it after hearing this was that something was obviously looking at something or looking for something around where he lived. Now, he had also told us of all the small animals that his dogs had drug up, but had literally dried up. He called them dehydrated. And so, again, I didn't make the connection. It wasn't until a month later when we went back after MUFON showed up. Let me back up just a second. There were some tracks that he showed us under his deck. He lived in a trailer out in the country, and the field that he was back up against was just a great big soybean field.
Okay, what were the tracks?
The tracks, they were strange. As a matter of fact, we wanted to take a sample of them, and he told us not to because MUFON had contacted him and told him to leave everything as it was until they showed up. So we didn't bother it, but the tracks, this might sound strange, but it looked like, have you ever seen a chicken's track? Except this had webs between the toes, bigger webs than a chicken would have. But it definitely was an imprint, and it was organic. I'm also a physician, and I'm using an alias for obvious reasons. And so having that interest in this, we went out there. I guess it was my first official UFO investigation that turned out to be a little stranger because, in fact, when we went back a month later, MUFON had interviewed his two sons. And the little boy, the smaller boy, had told the people that he had saw this creature up in a tree.
Uh-huh.
And again, I had not made the connection with the small animals, but we were more interested in the UFO sighting and some of the strange phenomena that centered around it. So when we heard MUFON had told the little boy that was a chupacabra, the way he described it. And this person was obviously in a situation he didn't want any more media on this because
his
first initial, the local radio stations were making fun of him. And so we were genuine with him. And, to this date, I could go back out there and visit with him. But it was very interesting, and I thought maybe I'd shed that light on.
Well, why don't you do two things? One, why don't you put him in touch with me?
Sure.
Because we don't laugh at people here.
Right. I understand that.
All right.
I really appreciate your show, and I think you have some interesting concepts on that. My only thing is that whatever it was, after thinking about this from having been out there on two different occasions, is that it would take too much detail to go in to make this correlation. But from what I understood, and this is just an opinion, but it seemed like whatever had gotten loose out there and had been out there weeks before this sighting appeared, something had some way of tracking this animal, and it had to be something with a lot more technology than we have, and was because after that incident, after the UFO incident, there were no more dead animals.
Maybe it came and collected whatever it was, Doctor. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care. There you are, Scott.
That's a fascinating story. I'd never heard of that account.
Well, you know, what I found is, Scott, when you don't laugh at people, when you simply listen to them, they don't mind telling their story. But just about everybody minds being ridiculed, and they don't like it. And if you ridicule them, then they're just not ever going
to
tell you their story. Anyway, listen, Scott, your book, Chupacabras and Other Mysteries, is not yet available. So what can they do? Take pre-orders at this point?
The expected release date at the time is July 4th.
July 4th, a great day to release a book indeed. All right, my friend, I want to thank you for being here, and we will do it again sometime.
Thank you very much, Art. It's been my pleasure.
Scott, take care, and I hope you can get some sleep.
I'll try.
All right, thank you, and good night. That's Scott Corrales, and he knows about the chupacabra and other such animals. Coming up next, Open Line Talk Radio. Unscreened, unplanned, and sometimes pretty weird.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
Dina Dow.
Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
Top of the morning. This is another one of those ones that have been running around in my head. And around and around and around. Why is that? How does music do that to a person? How does it do it? Actually, the music was much better than the movie. I'm going to touch on just a couple of things here, and then we're going to go to open lines. Over the weekend, CNN and the USA Today combined in their efforts, as they do many times, to do a poll. And the results of that poll, along with many other questions, were as follows. 64% of the American people, all of you, say aliens have contacted humans. Imagine that. 80% of all Americans. I said 80%. And we rarely ever agree, you know, in that percentile. 80% of all Americans say they believe the U.S. government is hiding information on alien contact. These are not small majorities. They're big ones. And my question is, why do you think such a large group of Americans believe in alien presence, in fact, in a greater percentage than they give their own government credibility? It's a pretty good question, isn't it? They believe more in aliens than they do in their own government. And then, of course, there is the one that I think most of the talk shows are probably talking about, and I will not ignore it, the president in San Diego made a speech in which he considered, it's interesting that he would consider it as opposed to doing it. It's like trying to run it up the flagpole or something. Considering an apology to black Americans for slavery. Now, the first question I have is why the president would consider publicly giving an apology. If you're going to do it, why not just do it? Is he just putting this out there, trying to see what we think of the idea? I suppose. He conducts himself mostly by polling, doesn't he? So, obviously then, is it proper the president apologize for slavery? For our ancestors' misdoings? Is it proper he would do that? Is there any good reason for him to do it? Now, there are a couple of ways of looking at race relations in America today. One of them is the inner cities, where they are arguably deteriorating, getting worse. And the other is non-inner city areas, where relations probably are getting better. As a matter of fact, I think it was Cokie Roberts on the Sunday show said that interracial marriage is up 20% in the last 10 years. And I have always thought that eventually that will put an end to race difficulties, because there will continue to be interracial marriage until finally we all end up being grays or something. You know, not black, not white, not red. With some Asian characteristics, we'll end up looking like grays with some Asian characteristics. What does that remind you of? So there is that.
Now we take you back to the night of June 16th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Hi, Art. I feel more people believe in aliens, true, than our government, because the aliens haven't lied to us as much as the government has. As far as President Clinton, or anybody for that matter, apologizing to blacks in America for slavery, I don't know too many people living today that had anything to do with it. So why should anybody living today have to apologize for it? It's too bad that there was slavery in the first place. But I'm sure not going to apologize for something I had nothing to do with. Nick in KSTP country. Yeah. I kind of understand that. I think that our president is just setting something up to be talked about, argued about, that will have no relevance for those who take the position Nick does, or that I do. And I'm not against it. Slavery was wrong. Everybody knows that. But what relevance is there? In what way will it improve anybody's life out there for a president to make an apology? By the way, while we're still at it, he won't even apologize to Paula Jones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm not getting you on my radio right now.
You're not?
No, I'm...
Well, there's then two reasons for you to have it off.
All right. I watch zombie movies, Italian zombie movies, and...
You watch Italian zombie movies?
Yeah, from the 70s. And I was wondering if, say there was a contagion or a disease now that was infecting people, killing them, the bodies, I don't know, they still had the disease when they were buried, and... Do you think that there's a possibility that any disease that was coming forth right now would in some kind of state of limbo, or maybe I'm just wondering if there's a possibility that maybe these diseases could revive the person to come out of the ground?
Well, I would hope not. That would be the last thing I would want to see. You remember Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah, that's one of my
movies. Probably one of your favorite movies, right?
Dawn of the Dead, too.
Dawn of the Dead. I hope not. I mean, but you never know. There might be some little something down there lying dormant, waiting for just the right pollutant to come along and marry it. And it would reanimate, a better term, the dead, and we would have once again zombies.
Wow.
Would you, if there were zombies... I take it from what you've just told me, you would be a fan.
I suppose it would probably, I mean, I'd always...
I mean, you might even be a zombie groupie.
Maybe from a distance. yeah, because...
I remember, look, when I was young and the original movie came along,
mm-hmm.
Night of the Living Dead, I thought that was one of the scariest movies I had ever seen in my whole life, and it gave me nightmares for I don't know how long.
Yeah.
It was horrible. The original one was actually more horrible than the redo, you know, where we had color graphic of people being dismembered. Oh, man, I remember that first one. Actually, even the advertisement for it on the radio, I don't know if those of you who are old enough to remember or not, but even the advertisement for Night of the Living Dead on the radio was really, really scary. Boy, that was scary. Whew. Used to freak me out, but then again, I liked it too. So there he was, a fan of zombies. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Yes.
This is Jerry from Nashville. I'm a black person, and I've read Ghost Wolf's manuscript, and I think that probably what...
Would you turn your radio off, please?
I sure will.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably what he's... President is getting at is just sort of moving forward, recreating our thoughts throughout this manuscript. You know, he speaks of different meetings and...
Isn't that a beautiful manuscript?
Oh, it is. It is. It's just lovely. Uh-huh. But I don't think... I certainly don't require an apology, but I just think that perhaps, I get the impression that we need to change the direction, and so we just need to start somewhere, you know, even with the Indians, you know, just... the people that probably, the people that did this are not no longer here, but it's just a way of starting. You know, I'm on my prayer bones all the time, asking for forgiveness for anything I've done to people, you know. And
but everything relate, in other words, every group has done something to another group. Blacks were here, and they helped, in many cases, fight against the Native Americans.
You are absolutely right. I mean, I think we all should be, you know, I think this should be, he should be speaking up, you know, for everybody. I agree with that.
And then maybe the British owe us a big apology. we'd no doubt owe the Mexicans an apology. I mean, we can all begin apologizing to each other for everything that's happened in the past.
Right. You're absolutely right.
I would just like to know if there's really anything that you feel would come of the president apologizing for slavery. Would there be any difference in your life, in people's hearts, or anything?
No, not at all. I just feel that this is just a way of, you know, starting over and improving, you know, the future for us, because I get the impression that our thoughts, you know, are causing us to move towards destruction, and that's the only thing that I see.
There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you very much. Move toward destruction. We are doing that. Now, if I could understand in some way that an apology from the president really would change hearts... And at least he had that part right. I mean, we've already made the laws, and for the most part, they're followed. But that does not change a person's heart, and you can't legislate that. So, if I thought that the apology would change hearts, then I'd be for it. But I don't think so, and so I think all he's doing... It seems like, anyway, all he's doing is just sort of putting out there something to be argued about. Moreover, he didn't really do it, and to me, he should have had the body parts to just come out and give the apology. If he had it in his mind to do it, then he should have just done it. He doesn't have to ask us, in effect, permission to do it. You know, like there'll be a poll, and then if the American people... decide collectively in a poll that an apology is in order, then he's going to go ahead and make it. If not, why, then we'll hear no more about it. I just don't like the way he's doing that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Art.
Yes.
I was just listening to what you had to say to that last caller.
Yes.
And I've got to agree with you. This is pretty much redundant. I'm a white man married to a black woman. And I see where no apology would do anything. I mean, it's ridiculous. If they're going to do anything, you know, why not apologize to the Native Americans for robbing their land from them?
I don't know. I mean, there have been injustices perpetrated by peoples upon peoples for as long as there have been peoples.
Right, I hear you.
So, yeah. I'm not sure what he's doing back there. I guess he wants something to be argued about. I don't know.
Being that my wife is black, if he wants to do anything, give us the equivalent of the 40 acres and a mule that was promised, I guess. I don't know. This is kind of stupid.
You'd have something real to argue about, at least.
Right. Exactly.
Right. I thank you for the call. 40 acres and mule, or whatever it is Farrakhan wants, or, you know, some sort of remuneration or whatever. We apologized for incarceration of the Japanese, the internment, incarceration, you picked the word, during the Second World War, as being unconstitutional. Of course, there are survivors of that. I don't think there's anybody around now that was a slave, or anybody around now that was a slave owner. And I don't know, I vacillate between thinking, well, it's an okay thing. It would have been okay if he'd just come out and had done it. But to sort of make it a national question, should we or should we not apologize, which is what I'm getting from what he said in San Diego, I just don't see why we're doing that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Jack from San Joaquin Valley in California.
Hi, Jack.
Hi. I'm calling about the mention earlier of this law about the technology that allow the police to find concealed weapons in your car.
No. It's worse than that, Jack. In other words, a police car going by on the street could send out a beam to you, and they could literally see through your clothing and see a concealed weapon. That's the technology. Now, how about that?
Well, I wouldn't have a problem with this as long as it was a condition of parole. For everybody on the streets who's just walking around and minding their own business, never been in trouble with the law,
yeah.
I can see where this would be a problem. And this I would have a problem with. If a person's on parole or probation and it's a condition of their parole and they have a search clause, then I can see where this could be initiated for this particular person.
Well, if they identify the person and then did the search electronically, that would be one thing. But to have this device on a police car or in a patrol car as a routine matter, going around looking for people carrying concealed weapons, I don't know. That seems to me like a clear violation of the Fourth Amendment, clearly.
I would tend to agree with you on that point, Art. I can see that. I'm not really certain about how this technology is all-encompassing. First time I've heard about it is on your show tonight.
Right. Well, it's for real. I'm sorry to say it's for real. Thank you very much for the call. It was covered on the Sunday shows. It's not here yet, but it's coming. And they already, you know, have little machines that can literally look through your clothes and see you naked. They are used at some airports. And I suppose it's some sort of offshoot of that, something that would allow them to detect the presence and see the shape of a gun. Technology. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah. Is it okay if I have any subject tonight?
Any subject?
Yeah, something I've been kind of noticing when I watch TV and stuff, read magazines. A couple of years ago, I was watching an article about the Canadians were upset with the American military about something about certain kinds of hawks or something that are migrating back and forth because the military reason for experiments. And the experiment was that they had a small item attached to the bird's leg that they could track it by satellite. And then that the next step, which was supposed to be available the next year, and this was
right.
Several years ago, is that thing on their leg would actually be able to transmit a video signal to the satellite. And, you know, this is just kind of giving me an idea of what the technology is out there available. And when I read articles in different science magazines about the global positioning devices that they have.
Oh, yes.
And that they're also working on transmitting badges so that you could wear a badge that would transmit your location. And some of the applications that were talked about was like, you know, you go to Disneyland and you put one on each child. you don't have to worry about, you know, them
sure.
getting lost.
Sure.
And when I start to piece the whole thing together, and, you know, I'm not really one of those conspiracy-minded people, but, you know, in general, I don't trust government. But when I think about the whole thing pieced together, if, you know, when I think about the applications for crime, you know, if I was able to put something on somebody, that would, I would know where they are at any time.
Well, the best way you could do that would be not to put it on them, but to,
exactly.
but to put it in them.
Yes, put it in them. The chip would, you know, there's that one county, I believe, in some state where they were
a
injecting
transponder.
Animals with chips.
Yeah, I don't know. They're doing it all over the place.
Exactly, and it was mandatory. In one
but that county. Requires an active scanner. What they
yeah.
could put in you is an active device that would, in effect, be like an airplane transponder.
Mm-hmm.
And so they could literally track everybody going everywhere.
Right. And the thing is, you know, one of the things that I always think about government, the way to get what you want is to have the people demand it. And, you know, when you start talking about how it could solve crime, you know, children would no longer be a threat to be, or not 100%, but, you know, your children, you could find out where they are within a blink of a second, possibly, and they could, you know, who is going to take anybody's kids anymore with the possibility of being found immediately. When, you know, I'm talking years down the road, when you tie this all in with, you start tying it in with laser satellite technology
yep.
and different things like that, I start to think, well, you know, if the good citizen, if all the good citizens who have this chip or whatever on them, you know, then you look down the road at, you know, when it comes to control, you could be taken out at any time, at any place, whenever they wanted to.
Well, if they came, do you have children?
Yes.
Yeah. They came to you and said, we could implant this chip in your children. And it would increase their safety manyfold. We'd find them if they got lost or kidnapped or some foul play took place. Would you go for it?
No, not with the way I'm thinking right now, of course, no.
No chips for my kids, huh?
No chips for my kids. But, you know, there's sometimes I think to myself, gee, you know, if I can figure this out, then they've already gone beyond what I'm thinking of. I've even
well, you know what? You
had
can
talks about they can put it in you without you knowing it.
Yeah,
you know?
You can almost depend on it. How about mm-hmm. this? As everybody goes in for a routine operation,
mm-hmm.
they get implanted.
Yeah.
Think about it. It could be.
Yep.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself.
Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 16th, 1997.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back. I'm Art Bell, and yes, this is the new time slot we're in. Somebody writes, Art, would you please explain your reasoning for moving the time slot of your show, Russ in California? Sure. No problem, Russ. We are generally thought of as an all-night program. And it's easier to be an all-night program beginning at 1 a.m. on the East Coast than it is at 2. And that is the main reason for moving. And then, of course, as you come across the time zones in the country, it becomes very convenient. For example, in the Midwest, we have a midnight start. in mountain time zones, we have an 11 o'clock start, and here in the Pacific, we have a 10 o'clock start. So it was just sort of more convenient all the way around.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Open up your third eye with Coast to Coast AM and George Norrie.
I am now convinced that people who listen to this program have an even higher IQ. They truly want knowledge because they are different than most people.
And they are the people that have left themselves open. They don't put blinkers on. They are looking for information, and this is where they find it. So, once again, I've got to compliment you for bringing this kind of programming to the masses, and that's a beautiful thing.
Now we take you back to the night of June 16th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, back to the lines we go. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
How are you?
This is Richard calling from Reno.
Hi, Richard.
Since we're having open lines this evening, I thought I'd like to talk about black helicopters.
Okay.
I've spent, I'm a retired Air Force firefighter, and I spent a good portion of my time during my military career watching helicopters fly around the airfield.
Yeah.
And most military helicopters are black.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
You know, and in the general paranoia, these helicopters got to fly around, and
So what's
I don't
the big,
know where it started. Excuse me?
What's the big deal?
Nothing. I just wonder what the big deal is with the people's concern about black helicopters.
You're the first call I've had in weeks.
Is it?
Yeah. So it must be just you.
Yeah, well, no, it's...
There could be one hovering outside your window right now.
Quite possibly, all right.
Looking in.
Yes.
Taking in every little detail of your life.
They probably already have it.
That's right.
And the second thing I'd like to talk to you about is your back problems.
Well, that's a sore subject.
Yes, sir, it is. I've had chronic back problems for about 15 years, and I don't refer to it as a bad back. I refer to it as a problem back, because if I get to thinking it's a bad back, it'll just get me down and keep me down.
It's a bad back. Mine's a bad back.
Don't let it get you down.
Bad back. Oh, no, it doesn't.
I let it slow me down, but I don't let it stop me.
Well, occasionally, about 2-3 times a year, it turns me into a pretzel for a period of a day or two, and then I slowly begin to, come back to a normal person.
Yeah, I'm having that problem now. Oh. I'm a long-haul truck driver, Art, and you keep me going quite a bit.
All right, my friend.
Help me make it through some nights. You have a good morning and a good day, huh?
You take care. I have a bad back. Now, I created my own bad back. I fell off a pole. I did what in the industry is called burning a pole. You know what burning a pole is? You have 2 choices when you burn a pole. You can either... Have you ever seen a phone pole up close? Have you ever seen... Well, they have little things sticking out of them. So when you fall off a pole, you have 2 choices. You can either grab the pole and slide down it, in essence, and they will be picking things out of your body for months to come, and you'll generally get poisoned. Or you can push away from the pole and fall. I chose to push away from the pole and fall. And I came down on my butt and my elbow. And when I did, it compressed two of my vertebrae, L4 and L5, so that every now and then they reach out and touch the adjacent nerve. And when they do, I become like a pretzel for a few days. And that is my bad back. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Is this still the free calling?
I beg your pardon?
This
it's not free calling anymore. Now it's 25 cents per minute.
Okay, well, that's okay. I just had a question for you. A couple months back, I was listening to your show, and you had gotten a fax from the girlfriend of a guy named Billy Bob or something like that who was flying over Area 51.
Yeah, oh, yes.
And I listened to it until his radio had cut out, and then I never heard anything more about that. And
there's nothing more to hear. I mean, it's not like you can pick up a telephone and call Area 51, you see.
Yeah, because it was just the concern in your voice when you were trying to get him to not do what he was doing, and then when the radio cut out.
Well, I anticipated the fact that he would be shot down.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I believe occurred. He got shot down.
After that, didn't his girlfriend fax you saying that she was going to see...
That's right.
Find out what happened, and that
that's
you,
right.
You haven't heard anything from him?
Nary a word.
Oh, boy.
Because
I was just wondering about that.
So they probably got hurt, too, is the way I figured.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care. Yeah, I think they got her. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, all right. This is Gary from St. Louis.
Hello, Gary.
Yeah, you were talking earlier about the electronic thing, the cops being able to look at you and see if you're carrying weapons.
That's right.
Well, geez, Art, they don't really need to do that. They can stop you for any imagined violation and search you in your car without a warrant right now. So what do they need that for?
Well, I guess too many people are complaining about those kinds of searches. So this way they'll be able to just go zzz from their patrol car, and they'll see that you have a gun, and then they will have sufficient cause to search. Now, what I'm saying is this kind of technology, to me, represents a terrible, terrible invasion of our privacy and a violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. What do you think?
I think it could very well get that far, but I think they're doing that already, Art.
Well,
I mean, the forfeiture laws, drug forfeiture laws, they can take your belongings, your cash. They don't even have to charge you. They don't even have to convict you.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah. Talking about Orwell, yeah.
Yep.
Good morning,
Mr. Orwell, wherever you are. Thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi there.
It's Tootie in Northern California.
Well, hi.
How are you?
I am well.
Good. Me too. You were talking about chips in people to identify them.
Yes.
I heard a couple of years ago that that's being done already in Bulgaria to the babies that are born there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Bulgarian babies of all things?
Mm-hmm.
You would think, wouldn't you, that American babies would be the first, but maybe not.
Oh, because we're the first in everything?
Well, because that kind of technology would be developed here.
Well, I don't know. But that anyway, I heard that a couple of years ago, so it's here, it's with us, and, you know.
Well, do you have any children?
No.
No? If you do have any children, as you read today's headlines, with children being kidnapped and killed, would you be willing to have a chip implanted in your child?
I'd prefer not.
Suppose they told you, but... crime is rampant, children are being taken, children are being assaulted, and this chip would allow us to save your child's life.
I doubt it. I don't think that they could make that kind of assertion, and they certainly couldn't guarantee that, and I don't think it's worth it. I think that the lack of privacy, well, we don't have any privacy anymore, but I mean, enough is enough, and I would prefer not to do that.
Okay. No chip for you, then.
No chip.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Take care. No chip there. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. Steve from South Dakota.
Hello, Steve.
Oh, I was just sitting here burning the midnight oil or the early morning oil, getting ready to send some stuff to Richard, and I hear he's going to be on tomorrow night.
That's true.
And I just wanted to call and tell you how much I enjoyed your show with Stan Tenen.
Oh, wasn't that good?
That was a marvelous show.
Yes.
If you ever have him on again... ask me about the technology of the Great Pyramid of Giza.
Well...
he has quite a theory about some of the things that...
All right, I will ask him, but Richard will have comments about Egypt tomorrow.
Good. Okay. Have you used your have you been out using your scope lately?
My scope.
No, telescope.
Oh, telescope.
Yes,
you got to say telescopes.
I'm sorry.
Not last week or two. I've also used my telescope for terrestrial stuff, and it's really cool.
Boy, the moon is really glorious right now.
Is it? Good time to look?
Yep, it's time to look.
We're coming toward a full moon, aren't we?
Yeah, it's about three-quarter moon right now.
Okay. Well, you're right. Maybe it would be a good time when I get off to go out there and take a look-see. Thanks. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Kate from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. You discussed a little while ago a certain subject I'd like to just give you a little thought upon. Maybe it might give you an idea or two.
All right.
Okay, it's about suicide.
Yep.
You remember?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a book here that is called Song of the Phoenix from Santa Fe. The lady is called Lily Fairchild.
Yes.
Okay. And it's called, you know, the prefix of the book is called Voices of Comfort and Healing from the Afterlife.
Yes.
Okay, now, you know, it's kind of hard to prove channeling, so I can't tell you this is the honest truth, correct?
Well, that's, you know, people have different points of view about that.
Yes,
we do. You know how I feel about channeling. I'm suspicious.
Well, I am too, because, you know, we don't have proof. Exactly. Okay, but I thought I'd read you this about three paragraphs here and just turn you on a little bit about this suicide thing, okay?
Okay.
Are you open?
I'm listening. Don't read to me, though.
Here it goes.
No, don't. No, no.
No, I won't read to you.
Okay.
I'll give you my own words through spacing.
All right, go ahead.
You know,
go ahead.
We can afford to read.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, now, what we all call suicide, right?
Yes.
Is a deliberate termination of your own life.
Sounds that way to me, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, now this, when you do that, disrupts a pattern that was set forth and agreed upon by you and your chosen destiny. Apparently, we all have a chosen destiny before we are born.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, but then one could argue that your chosen destiny is to commit suicide.
That could be the case, exactly. Now, it says here, you know, however, of course, agreed upon by you as your choice, not you must examine, okay, not only your action, you know, the action you cause on itself, but the intent behind the action to determine whether it is appropriate or inappropriate.
Well, I think that I don't know what that means, but I would say that one should examine the effect it will have on those left behind. In other words, not consider just yourself, but your family, your children, your friends, all of those who will be affected by your actions. And if you don't consider all of that, then you are committing, indeed, a very selfish act, aren't you? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, good morning. What a treat it is to hear you at 6 o'clock in Philadelphia. I'll tell you, it's incredible. Thanks for the extra hours in the East Coast.
You bet.
Yeah, I'm the one that sent you the email to start out our host, Artin Perump. I'll leave it at that. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Thank you. So they've got us to Philadelphia in Philadelphia for the whole show now. Wow. Cool. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, good evening, Art.
Good evening, sir.
I was just thinking, you know, I think it's a good idea to implant it in kids, but I'd like to just be sure that they take it out at a certain point, you know?
Whoa. That's like when they bring on a new tax, you know, and they say the tax will be what's called a sunset tax.
What's that?
Well, that means it's kind of like saying when the sun goes down or when the need for the tax goes away, they will no longer have the tax.
Right.
That's never true.
Yes. Good luck trying
so
to
when
get
they
that.
Get the chip in, the odds of it being taken out, slim and none.
Now, let me ask you a question. If Chupacabra and Bigfoot got into a fight, who would win?
Well, I think Chupacabra, because Chupacabra would reach in and pull Bigfoot's guts out. Now,
true.
It would be arguably a gigantic meal.
That's true.
Perhaps too much for a chupa, but, you know, I think the chupa would take it.
Bigfoot would have the reach, but chupacabra's got the heart, let's face it.
And the liver, and the spleen,
the blood,
and the lungs.
And the eyeballs.
There you go, sir. Thank you for such a gory call at the end of the day. On my international line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
It's your birthday.
Well, you're right, it is.
And I haven't heard anyone sing happy birthday or even say happy birthday to you.
Do not sing happy birthday to me.
All right, we won't.
Actually, I'm going to deal with my birthday tonight when I come on the air.
Good. We missed you, your first hour today.
Uh-huh. Where are you?
Up in Vancouver.
Vancouver. Well, we now start the show 1 hour earlier, so the best thing to do is to call your local radio station and ask them to begin carrying the first hour.
Yeah, I did that once, but I think I'll do it again because I sure miss having the beginning of the show.
Okay.
All right, so happy birthday to you, Art. We love you.
Well, thank you. And my guess would be, by the way, now that I think about it, you will probably get the first hour as the next hour. Maybe. I don't know. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bell. My great-great-grandfather had slaves in Texas.
All right. Do you hold on a sec? Let me redo this here. Do you want to apologize for that now?
No, I don't.
Why not?
I didn't do it.
You don't feel guilty?
I don't feel guilty. And blacks, if
you don't think you have genetic guilt?
I don't have genetic guilt. As a matter of fact, if you'll go back and look at Africa and the history, and you'll find, look at the history of Egypt and northern Africa, you'll find out that blacks and Africans had blacks as slaves there.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned Egypt.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Egypt because the traditional explanation of how the pyramids got built.
Yes.
Now, shouldn't somebody be apologized to there?
That's right.
Remember all those people that had to tote those big rocks? I saw it in the movies.
Another thing tonight, President Clinton was very interesting. Was Clinton came on and also mentioned that
they were even crushing people between the rocks. I mean, think of the apology those people ought to get.
That's right. There's so many apologies due for a lot of things. And I'm not condoning what my great-great-great-grandfather did. But on the other hand, I just want to say this again, please, is that Clinton came on tonight. He indicated within 30 to 50 years that the white people in the country will be outnumbered. And he's like shoving this down our throats and saying, this is something we're going to have to accept, and we're going to have good race relations, whether we like it or not. And I'm just going to say this, and I've said it before, and you've probably heard me when I've said it previously. Name on your left hand five things that a black person has invented, manufactured, brought to market.
Oh, well, you sound like a racist.
No, sir, I'm not a racist.
You sound like a racist.
No. But as a matter of fact, no.
Actually, President Clinton is right about that. We are going to all have to ultimately get along.
No, we don't.
Yes, that's the problem.
The Germans don't. The British, the French don't. You see, they have race problems. Well, they have big race problems in Germany. They're having big race problems also in Britain.
There's race problems all over the world.
That's right.
And ultimately, we're all going to have to get along.
Ultimately,
and when we finally get our consciousnesses raised enough,
right.
Maybe we will.
Well, sir, let me just say this one thing. You know, I like your show, and I listen to it a lot. You know, and you're married to a Puerto Rican Filipina, and I've seen her. She's a nice-looking lady. And, you know, you believe in everybody's going to go gray. And I don't
right now,
I don't agree with you.
That's fine. The president right now said that in the last decade, interracial marriage has increased by 20%. That is going to have an inevitable result.
The inevitable result, it will pull the whites down because, you see, look around you. Everything, the ham radio that you love so well, and your computer, and your carpet, and your desk, those were invented by white people, mainly white men.
Oh, you're just an ignorant person. I'm sorry that you like my show, and I can't imagine why you do. That's very sad. You, sir, are an ignorant person. Have a good morning. Have a nice day. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow at 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 a.m. East Coast time. I'm Art Bell from the high desert. Good night.